welcome in once again. Meggo and Shime here, back-to-back days. Meggo, I hope you enjoyed your 4th of July, your Independence Day yesterday. I hope you had a wonderful day after our show.
I did. I very much did. Ended the night last night by watching an all-American film, The Godfather.
Nice.
I made it through when Michael goes to Italy. And then I was like, I got to go to bed.
Hell yeah.
I got to go to bed. I got a show in the morning.
There you go. Good. I played some golf. I drank a lot of beer and I went to bed nice and early. It was great.
That sounds delightful.
It was the perfect way to spend 4th of July. But the Boston Red Sox, as you heard there, 11-2 win yesterday in the nation's capital over the Washington Nationals. Big game for Trevor Story. He was 4-for-5 in that one. Had that home run as well. Look, Meggo, now this is back-to-back weeks now that the Sox have had games where they're scoring over 10 runs. Do you feel like the offense is taking a turn for the better? Do you feel like they're starting to move in the right direction here as they fight to get back above 500?
I think even besides the offense, seeing another great outing by Lucas Giolito is a major deal for the Red Sox. It wasn't so long ago that Giolito and Walker Buehler both look like a total mess. And now Buehler just looks like the mess that you have to figure out. Giolito has really rounded into form. And in terms of the offense, I think it's great that they can do this against the Nationals. And I think the bare minimum of what this team's going to have to do leading up until the All-Star break, just 8 days from now, is cruise through the Nats, cruise through the Rockies. And the offense is going to have to be a big part of that. I'm still not ready to sit here and say the offense has totally turned a page, because I still can't shake that final game against the Reds with the bad base running
100%.
Out of my head. But look, you get a nice 3 RBI day for Jarren Duran. Maybe Trevor Story, again, is waking up a little bit. And then Alex Bregman on the horizon, like this. And of course, Willie Abreu is just Willie Abreu.
Roman Anthony started to hit as well. If you add that in, I think Marcelo Meyer continues to get better. I just think overall, you're looking at an offense that's continuing to improve, right? They're at least headed in the right direction. I'm not willing to say, just like you, I'm not willing to say they're back. They're ready. They're ready to compete. But at least you're seeing some progress, especially a guy like Trevor Story, who was abysmal for the first, month and a half, 2 months of the season. He now kind of has figured it out at the plate. He's hitting 250 now after a 4-hit day yesterday. Roman Anthony's hitting around 220. Like, he's finally starting to work in the right direction. I think in the last, I want to say it's last, 29 at-bats, he has, 12 hits. So he's coming around. He's starting to figure things out at the major league level. And so I'm hoping that this is progress. I'm hoping that they are starting to get better. But as you said, those errors, those base running mistakes always tend to kind of just hover there in the background, and they're always going to pop up when you least expect
them. The biggest issue with this Red Sox team has been consistency.
Sure.
So it's not like you don't expect them to play a good game. And again, I think Giolito's trajectory is the biggest takeaway for me overall, is that he continues to stack these starts and going more than 7 innings. That's the kind of stuff that felt like a dream, like a pipe dream a month ago. Remember when you were yanking guys after 3 or 4 innings in their starts and you were putting so much pressure on the bullpen? So that's the biggest takeaway for me. Then you have Walker Buehler today. So we'll have the Walker Buehler experience starting.
So the Red Sox are going to need to score another 10 runs in order to win
today. Yeah, so you're going to need overwhelming run support. The kind of run support, I don't know. What's something that the offense is going to have to probably carry the entire team today.
I would say that that's probably the case. But yeah, as you pointed out with Giolito, 5 consecutive starts, now 6 innings or more. He's only allowed 3 earned runs over those 5 starts.
Incredible.
Granted, it's 7 runs, but those are probably because of the errors that are happening in the field and the situation. So he has been so much better than you could have expected him to be after, for a guy who hadn't played baseball in 400 days or whatever it was when he made his first start. So to see him coming around, you pair that with Garrett Crochet, it's like, okay, if we somehow manage to get in the thick of things, we have a legitimate 1-2 punch here. And Garrett Crochet, Lucas Giolito, and if you can dispose of Walker Buehler however you see fit and kind of replace him with a different, I don't know, just capable starter. They need a guy like, I go back years ago, like a guy like Wade Miley, who he'll just go out there, he'll give you six innings. He may not throw an absolute gem, but he'll get out there, he'll give you six innings. He may give up three runs, but he'll give you all of those innings. And he will just, and he'll take the ball every 5 days, where Walker Buehler just goes out there and implodes on a regular basis.
It's unfortunate they can't have Bayo be that guy at this point.
He's gotten better, though. Like,
he certainly has. He's gotten steadier.
Yes, for sure. And so you hope that he continues to improve, and then maybe, you know, the pitching staff starts to round itself out.
Yeah. And again, like, I think it's just the biggest thing for this team has been the consistency. And it feels like a lot of the time that you can't trust them until they start actually stacking series. And they should be able to do that because they're playing two of the worst teams in baseball. So the bare minimum is to show everybody, and most importantly, show ownership that, and the front office, that they are much farther away from the bottom of the MLB than the top, even if their record doesn't completely reflect that as we sit here today.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Granted, they're still only, what, 2.5 games out of the wild card. They're right there. They're definitely not in that bottom echelon. Like, they are better than these teams. They should prove that over the next 5 games. They should win 4 of these next 5. You need to sweep either the Rockies or the Nationals in these series, if not both of them. And you kind of look at it and see, I mean, I think the Chicago White Sox were favored in a game for the first time all year because they played the Colorado Rockies yesterday. it's insane that a team like the Rockies has been this bad. And so this is the perfect opportunity for you to right the ship, get above 500, have a competitive series with the Tampa Bay Rays, and then hit the All-Star break and really kind of assess where you're at, where Alex Bregman is coming back from that injury, if he'll be ready, and what you need to add.
Yeah, I am kind of just expecting at this point that he's going to come back against the Rockies when they return to Fenway Park, because there's been lot out there about he.
So you think he's back before the All-Star break?
I think he's going to come back before the All-Star break.
Interesting. Okay.
I do. And so I'd like to see how he looks against the Rockies at Fenway, and I can't get that Jim Bowden report from The Athletic out of my head that we referenced. If you missed the show yesterday morning because you were getting an early start on your 4th of July celebrations, or you weren't in the car, you weren't driving to work. That report, if you missed it, Jim Bowden had talked to 40 execs around the league and trying to get a feel on what the trade deadline's going to hold. Across the MLB, everybody basically agrees that they think Aroldis Chapman is the pitcher that's most likely to move.
Yep.
37-year-old on a 1-year deal, so it's not a huge surprise if the Red Sox decide to be sellers that he'd be a piece to go. But there was also, he said, at least a handful of executives who thought that if the Red Sox don't get a deal done with Alex Bregman, don't get an extension done, reworking the deal with Scott Boras, his agent, that they may trade him at this trade deadline. And I just think that even that being out there is dangerous.
Very
like
dangerous.
Why is that out there?
Well,
who does that put the pressure on here?
So I think it puts the pressure on the Boston Red Sox, but this to me is, it's definitely not from the Red Sox. Like, this is, he talked to 40 executives around the league. These are other teams hoping that Bregman shakes free and probably trying to apply pressure to the Red Sox to either make the deal or deal him. And so I think the Red Sox, it just feels like you have to make this deal with Bregman. You have to go to Scott Boras. You have to get this deal done, because if you don't, you look like the biggest horse's ass for having traded Rafael Devers, brought in Alex Bregman, created this giant kerfuffle, then had to trade Rafael Devers because of it, and then also trade Alex Bregman. That becomes the biggest, just absolute mistake that the Boston Red Sox have made in decades. Like, that's just an absolute blunder that can't happen. And so it's almost, the Red Sox are almost forced, just like they were with signing Rafael Devers after trading Mookie Betts and allowing Xander Bogaerts to leave. They had to sign Rafael Devers to appease the fans. You're almost at a point where you have to sign Alex Bregman. Otherwise, you look like the biggest fools.
Yeah, it would be. Can you think of another scenario in which a team in any of the sports would have lost basically 2 all-star caliber players in 6 months?
For nothing.
For nothing. Well, you would get, I mean, you get, not technically for nothing, because sure. we don't know what a trade back for Alex Bregman would
Fair.
Hold.
You're right.
But probably not much for this current yeah. roster. The same way that, hey, I know people are like excited about Hicks and whatever, and Devers is a, you could say like Devers was not going to work for this team and they're sure. better off without him. Addition by subtraction, they still didn't get a good return on him. Like, they still, nobody can sit there and tell me from a baseball perspective that they, quote, won the trade with Devers. I've seen the numbers out in San Francisco. I know. Like, he's been bad.
But even Sam Kennedy said, he himself of the Red Sox said that when you get rid of Rafael Devers, your lineup is never better. Like, it's like you have to then figure out a way to improve it.
They have to admit it. It to the point where Dan Shaughnessy on that weirdo Zoom that they had, like 40 hours after the trade, that week was so weird. But Shaughnessy was like, is this a baseball trade? What are you doing here? Because it really felt, and then again, I go back to that Zoom. The thing that bothered me the most about the way that they handled that Devers trade, because I didn't like Devers. I thought he was bratty. Like, he had to go. I get it. But when they basically said he was poisoning the well for the young guys coming up, like, we have to be very deliberate about the environment that we have in the clubhouse with our young professional players coming up. And it's like, you just spent the entire Zoom talking about how you had to be introspective and look in the mirror and see how you got to the point with the player. Maybe this kind of stuff is how you got to the point with the player. But again, if they had to trade Bregman, I think it would completely cancel out any goodwill that Breslow, Kennedy, John Henry with his smoking cigar picture, that anybody has with the fans. And we're to the point where Adam Jones likes Craig Breslow. Adam Jones likes Craig Breslow.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, I can't believe it. I love it. I love Jones. We did radio together for a couple years, and I don't think that he was tougher on anybody besides maybe Marcus Smart than Chaim Bloom. And Craig Breslow has already won over Adam Jones.
Yeah, I don't get it, because him and Chaim Bloom are very similar. And Craig Breslow has at least shown the willingness to make a couple
Craig
trades.
Well, and he's shown a willingness to come in and fire everybody who works for the Red Sox.
You know what? And that takes some stones. He dealt Rafael Devers. He traded for Garrett Crochet in dealing one of his young prospects that Chaim Bloom coveted so much. So to Breslow's credit, I think Breslow, to me, it's still an unknown, because I feel like he has made a handful of really good moves. Getting a guy like Carlos Narvaez and allowing him to start. I think, you know, getting Willy Abreu in here full time. He has been awesome since he came back from injury. The trade for Garrett Crochet, Aroldis Chapman, Alex Bregman. Like, what Breslow has done so far, a lot of it, it's actually more positive than it is negative.
Yes.
But
this would be...
They also sound really dumb every time they talk.
This would be a bridge too far.
I agree.
And if there's anybody out there who can tell me that dealing Alex Bregman at the trade deadline would be a good move, I don't understand how you could talk yourself into that. Losing... It's one thing to lose Rafael Devers because you get to the point where it's untenable for you. The situation has gone too far. You can't repair it. Fine. But then if you turn around and you lose Bregman too, what was the point of all of it? I mean, at least with moving on from Devers, you're saying, we chose Bregman. Like, this is our path forward. It's a Bregman team. Bregman's a leader here. But if you do, you kind of already made the decision. Now you just have to pay the decision.
617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in on the Sox. Let's get to the calls here early. Joe in New Bedford wants to talk about Bregman. Go ahead, Joe.
Meg O'Shine, love you both. Listen, what is this, like, Scared Straight WEEI radio on Saturdays?
What does that
Bregman
mean?
Has an Listen, he's got an option to stay with the Red Sox for over $40 million. He just got a repeat injury, all right, that he already suffered from. Unless he has an otherworldly second half to the year where other teams just think he's going to be amazing for the rest of his baseball career, there's no reason for him to opt out and leave. He's not going to get the same money that he's already got waiting for him in his opt-in. So there's no reason, there's no pressure for Breslow to go and sign him to an extension. You just said that Bregman, that this is Bregman's team. It is, but it isn't. It's Marcelo Myers. It's Roman Anthony's. It's the young kids of tomorrow's baseball team.
Yeah, but Joe, in every game, in every game, do you see who's talking to Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer on a daily basis every single day? It's Alex Bregman. There's pictures of them everywhere. Alex Bregman is the guy kind of leading these guys.
I agree. I do. I'm not saying that he's not. What I'm saying is you don't have to play scared straight here as Breslow. He's got $40 million waiting for him on his opt-in, and he just suffered an injury. Unless he goes out there and he plays like Babe Ruth in the second half of the season, no one's going to give him another contract for $40 million. They're just not.
All right, Joe, thanks for the call. I disagree. I think this is very similar to the Garrett Crochet conversation before the season started. Do you extend him? Do you allow him to go out and pitch on this short-term deal that he has, see what he does, and if he's awesome, he is going to demand even more money. Like, Bregman, before he got hurt, was hitting nearly 300. He was, with Rafael Devers in the middle of your lineup, the only offense you had, and he was excellent, on top of being a Gold Glove caliber third baseman. Like, when he comes back, he's going to bring that same glove back, and if he continues to hit around 300 and continue to mash, like, that price is just going to go up. I'm not even saying that you need to pay him more. It's more so term and removing that option. Mm-hmm. It's I would rather you kind of add 2 years to the deal he has, basically, so that it's four years, $160 million, and there's no option. That way, you have the option of trading him and moving on from him when you see fit, instead of him being able to, like, to have a great season and just leave when he wants to for nothing.
I totally get Joe's logic.
Sure.
He thinks we're being too overreactionary because he's saying basically that Bregman doesn't have leverage in this situation because of the injury, because he's not going to have enough to show to go out and test the market and get more. So Boston's going to be his best option. And that's possible, but quite honestly, this ownership / any iteration of this front office has not given, I don't think they've won over the benefit of the doubt that they understand what the market dictates most of the time. Like, I liked most of Breslow's offseason before this season, so I'm not crushing him for the mistakes of Chaim Bloom's past or whatever. But at the same time, I don't trust that they're smart enough to let a guy go out there and test the market and be able to compete and understand and, most importantly, read the situation with the player.
Yeah.
Read the relationship with the player, because Bregman's a guy who plays well here and wants to be here.
Yeah.
And so that already works tremendously in your favor. I just think that you're in a position where you also talked so much immediately after the Devers trade about how it afforded you financial flexibility. And people bought that line, hook, line, and sinker in a lot of respects, saying, yeah, okay, now they can turn around and let's see what they do at the trade deadline with that financial flexibility. Let's see what they do when the young players come up and getting deals done with them. And if you have that financial flexibility from Devers, again, you chose Bregman over Devers, why not apply what you got, some of what you got from that financial flexibility to figuring out whether it's term, removing an option, whether it is paying more to, yes, a player who was injured. Is anyone seriously concerned about this injury for him going forward?
No.
Do you think that this injury is going to impact him next season and the season after that?
No, I do not.
Then I don't think that should matter. I think that you should follow through with some of the things that you talked about immediately after the Devers trade and apply basically from the player that you lost to the player that you chose.
617-779-7937 is the call-in number. You can also text into that number, 603-TEXT-MAGO. Can't dismiss Bregman's agent is Scott Boras. Almost always finds a better deal for his player. I think that's another reason why you don't even let him get to free agency. It's because if Boras recognizes the contract is very fair market and a very good deal for Bregman, they're just going to take it. Boras is always out just to get the most money he can for his client. If he feels like this is the best opportunity for Alex Bregman and Alex Bregman wants to be here, they're going to sign the contract. It's that simple.
Yeah, I just think that if other execs around the leagues are looking at it and saying, hey, there's a good chance that Bregman moves if they don't get this deal done in the next 8 days, that's real to me. That's real to me, and that's dangerous for this front office.
I agree. We'll continue to discuss the Red Sox. Who else could move at the trade deadline? 617-779-7937. It's Mego and Chime here on a Saturday on Boston Sports Original WEEI. But right now, Jacob is going to get you caught up with what is trending in the wide world of sports. Mego and Chime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Happy Saturday to you. Hope you enjoyed a safe and fun 4th of July. Nobody had any fireworks incidents or anything out there. I hope everybody everybody drank. Maybe, you know, worst case scenario, got a little bit of sunburn. That's about it.
Are you a fireworks guy? I don't know if we really talked about this.
Not really, no.
Professionally or amateur fireworks never appealed to you?
They're fine. It's okay. Like, I don't hate them. Like, if I happened to be at a party or something, then, and there was fireworks close by, sure, like, that's cool, but I'm not dying to see fire. I don't need to, like, go see fireworks all the time.
I remember.
How did your dogs handle the fireworks yesterday?
Oh, my dog did not handle it well.
She was not happy.
Yeah.
We got out of the city for a night because I thought it would be better than being in the city where there's just nonstop neighborhood fireworks.
Sure.
There were still fireworks around.
Yep.
They definitely weren't as close to us as they would have been in the city, but yeah, she had her head under the sofa for most of the evening.
Yeah, we have to make like a blanket fort for Henry because he won't stop shaking, and he's drugged up and he still won't stop shaking, and so like he needs to like hide.
My dog doesn't shake. She just looks really sad and just tries to cram her entire body under pieces of furniture that don't allow it.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was a tough beat for her.
Yeah, Henry,
and I don't think it's going to alleviate for a couple days because people...
It's all weekend.
They have their leftover fireworks. Like, 4th of July was on a Friday, so you got to get your fireworks out on Saturday. You're probably going to have fireworks out on Sunday.
100%.
It's going to be a tough couple of days for
Kenton. And then people just, like, randomly will set off fireworks all throughout the month of July and August just because it's summertime and people are nuts. But yeah, Henry, like, shakes like a leaf and just pants the whole time, so it's real sad. Yeah, I feel bad.
Tough beat.
But he's doing all right. He's doing better this morning. The drugs are wearing off. He'll go for a nice walk. He'll be fine.
You have him on, like, actual
doggy
sedatives,
drugs.
Yeah,
right? Like, we called the vet and got prescribed drugs for the dog to try and help him manage his anxiety when it comes to fireworks.
Do you do that with thunderstorms as well?
So... Unfortunately, with thunderstorms, it's not as easy to predict as fireworks. Right. So like this...
Oh, you don't feel the electricity in the air?
No, unfortunately. I'm not a storm or static shock.
Your knee doesn't swell up and you go, oh, a storm's rolling in.
Oh, a storm's a brewing. Nope. So with the drugs, like you're supposed to give it to the dog 2 hours before whatever traumatic event is going to start. And so once a thunderstorm hits, like... There's nothing we could do. Like, if we give them the drugs now, the thunderstorm's going to be over by the time the drugs actually kick in. And then
you just have a drugged up dog.
Yeah, exactly. So, for the most part, we just kind of only do it for fireworks normally.
This is... Okay. Hey, Mego.
Is this from AI?
This is very exciting. We're getting a text to the station from the Red Sox front office.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
This is okay.
Sweet.
So this is a text. It says, hey, Mego, this is Breslow.
Oh, hi, Craig. Thanks for listening.
He calls himself Breslow?
He
like,
might.
Typically, when I call people up, I go, hey, it's Ottolini.
I mean, to be fair, I do refer to myself as Shime to other people. Well,
hold on, hold on. Pause. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Let me finish this text from the front office. Hey, Mego, this is Breslow. I am Mart enough to make trays. That's with the number two.
The number two, yeah.
I got a 69 on my multiple guess algorithm test at Yale. Okay.
Nice. 69, nice.
So first of all, thank you, Craig Breslow.
Passing grade.
Brezzy, for listening on a Saturday morning, the day after the 4th of July. That's how you know he's totally locked in, even in the middle of this national series.
Definitely.
And I don't know what an algorithm test at Yale is.
I don't either.
But he's smart enough to do it.
Credit to you, Craig. Thanks
now,
for
you
listening.
You refer to yourself as Shime?
When I talk about myself to other people sometimes, a lot
How
of times,
often
yeah.
You say, is this like Jimmy in Seinfeld where you're like, Shime's going to the gym?
No, like if
Shime's getting a workout on.
No. I'm not talking in the third person.
So in what context do you refer to yourself
like
as Shime?
If I was to text somebody that didn't have my number, I'd be like, hey, it's Shime.
Okay. In your personal life as well?
Sometimes. It depends who it is. Like, I would say 75% of the time, that's how I would text somebody for the first time.
Are others in your family also Shimes?
Yeah.
Are they also called Shimes?
No, they don't get called by their last name. I'm the one that gets called by his last name.
Was that something that extended back to like high school? Were you Chris in high school or were you Shime in high school?
No, I was Shime in high school. Always.
Yeah.
Well, they would make nicknames based off of my last name.
Like?
Like they would just like mess it up. At one point I was called Shmeem. It's Shime Time.
Shime Time became a thing.
And then
That's natural.
Yeah. And yeah. So people would just mess up my last name all the time.
Okay. Well, this has been a walk down. Does your wife call you Shime or your wife to be?
No.
She calls you Chris?
Yeah. Thank
you. She call you Christopher?
No, never.
Not when she's angry with you?
No, to our credit, we don't fight like ever. We get agitated with each other, but we have
get snippy.
We have had one like drag down knockout fight ever in our relationship.
I hope not literally.
No. Figuratively speaking,
shouting fight.
Yeah, where there were a little bit of shouting involved, and it was while we were trying to build a shelf when we bought our new home,
like a classic IKEA fight.
Yeah, so she had gotten this big ass like circular shelfing unit. From like some market in New Hampshire.
Okay.
And we took it back, and the way I like to put things together is very different than the way she likes to put things together.
Are you the person who is like, I don't really need the directions.
Yes.
I'll refer to them if like I'll look at them if something's going wrong.
Yep.
Because that's me.
Yeah, that's 100%.
And I hate building
and
stuff.
And she is very diligent. She likes to read the directions, take her time, organize what she has, and then do it bit by bit. I'm just like, all right, let's get this done.
Does she take out all the tools and make sure she has the tools that
she
needs?
Yeah, has
and,
everything
like, every
she
nut
needs.
And bolt and everything
yep.
lined up?
Keeps it organized, like very kind of, not OCD, but very kind of together and ready so that she knows, all right, step one, this, step two, this. And like, but I'm just like, yeah, screw the directions. Let's go. What do
Couldn't
I need? I need
me.
That nut. Let's go. And it was the first time we'd ever like built anything together. And it resulted in a little bit of anger on both sides. But since then, we've now recognized how each other operates in situations like that, and we're better for it.
It's all about communication, just
exactly.
like in the Red Sox front office.
Yeah, you know
it's
what?
It's all about communication.
And
they
have not
proven themselves to be very adept at that,
no,
especially judging by
the
entire
situation.
Rafael Devers experience this
that
year.
That was...
They have not earned the benefit of the doubt. It seems like the entire Red Sox front office experience this season has been building a shelving unit and screaming at each other.
It seems very much like my early relationships in life. Very toxic, to be completely candid.
Were you in toxic relationships before this one?
For sure.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Interesting.
Very much so.
That's fascinating.
Oh yeah.
Did you have a bitchy girlfriend phase, or were you the toxic one?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, I'll be honest.
Interesting.
You know, some introspection. Yeah, at some points I could have been a little toxic, for sure.
Were you ever the bad boy?
No. God, no. I was never. I mean.
So you're just like passive aggressive.
Yeah. And I would say I was. Controlling is a strong word a lot of the time. No.
You're a controlling boyfriend?
No, no,
are you hearing this, Jacob?
No, that's not what
I'm
saying.
I'm disgusted.
This is devastating. There's nothing grosser than a controlling boyfriend.
That's why I evolved. No, at one point I was. There were some controlling elements there, but also like I felt like I was being. Disrespected, and like I was like, I haven't seen you in months. I want to see you. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Like it was a whole thing. It's a long story, but you know, it's
we'll
fine.
Get to that off air.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
For an off air.
Yeah, you know, again, the good thing about life is that you learn from experiences, you grow, and you're better for them.
Want to grab a phone here?
Yeah, let's get back to Alex Bregman instead of my personal life. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. Great show. Thank you for taking the call. So on Alex Bregman, I do believe they should keep him. They should sign him. But we have to be careful as how long we sign for and how much. This is one of the issues with the Red Sox is signing guys, even with Devers. That was a mistake, that kind of contract, that many years. It's just, I'm not a fan of extended contracts. 3-4 year stops, that's it. Especially when you get to that age, you're in your 30s. 3 years, 4 years, that is it, and you move on. You can't not be tied down to a 8-10 year contract because it just does not work out. It never does.
Yeah. So thanks for the call, David.
That's just now how it works in contract land now.
Yeah, but like I think in this case, that's exactly what's going to happen. Like they're not going to give Bregman an 8-year deal.
No, but what do you think they're going to give him?
So his original deal was 3 years. With the opt-out after year one.
Right.
My thought is you rip up the opt-out and you add 2 more years to this contract. So it's after this season, basically a 4-year contract worth $160 million.
I like that.
I think that's great.
I think that sounds great.
He's not getting more than $40 million a year on the open market, and he gets 4 more years of security instead of only having like 1 or 2. And then everybody wins. He continues to be your leader here. You use some of that money you saved from the Rafael Devers trade. You put it towards Alex Bregman, the guy who's going to help your younger players develop and come along and be a major piece in your lineup going forward.
What do you make of the earlier caller, I think it was Joe's idea, that this isn't Bregman's team. This is already Marcelo Meyer's team. This is already Roman Anthony's team. I guess it can't be Christian Campbell's team because he's down in the minors again.
Yeah.
but eventually maybe it will also be partially his team.
No, they're to me like the clear heir apparent. Like they're the guys in waiting.
The future.
Yeah, they are the future, and that's kind of exactly what it is. But I mean, how many games have you now seen like pictures or videos of Bregman one-on-one talking to Roman Anthony, talking to Marcelo Meyer? That's his role. This is, they brought him in and dealt away Rafael Devers because they feel like a guy like Alex Bregman is exactly who they want as the face and leader of their organization right now. That's how they feel. And it makes sense. It's a guy who has won at every level of the sport he's ever been a part of. He is experienced. He's learned a lot over his career, and he's had a very productive career. And so it's the perfect guy. And I mean, Cora does nothing but rave. I mean, when we asked about him, when the Greg Hill Show was down at spring training, when they asked Alex Cora about Alex Bregman, Cora was like, this is like the greatest baseball player on the planet.
And
like,
it wasn't always that way between those two. Because I don't know if you know, but some like sketchy stuff happened in Houston. And
yeah.
There were some fractured relationships.
Sure. And now they clearly have a very good relationship. And I think that's a lot of the reason why Bregman is here, because of his relationship with Alex Cora. His wife like works in the city, or like is doing a program in the city. And so like he wants to be here. That's the key. He wants to be here. You can pay him. It's the perfect situation.
Okay. So earlier in the show, we got a text from somebody pretending to be Craig Breslow.
Yep.
And I think it was a pretending to be Craig Breslow, because we just got another text from a different phone number. And it says, "Yo, Shimon Ottolini, this is Brez."
The way he spelled Ottolini is hilarious.
Yes, and Brez with a Z, at the real Breslow.
Oh,
okay, so
cool.
So this is the real one. Just wanted to say I suck.
Oh.
Dot, dot, dot. I'm here with the owner. He wants to get it going. Let's go Red Sox. Let's go Red Sox.
Nice.
So not only is Craig Breslow texting us this morning on the 5th of July, after what must
hanging
have been like
Hunter.
A really fun 4th of July last night, because they had the early game where they ran through the Nationals after an Oval Office visit the day before.
Crazy.
Shaking the
White House.
Shaking the president's hand in the Oval Office. And then they probably had a huge party last night. So
massive.
Not only is Craig Breslow texting the show this morning, now we have John Henry also with him starting a Red Sox chant.
Love it.
Everything's great in Red Sox Nation.
Yeah, they're clearly happy and excited,
happy
right?
Happy 5th of July.
Let's go get another win against the Nationals today, and then maybe I will allow for some happiness.
If Walker Buehler... I can't remember exactly who walked through the Oval Office in that video. We can refer to it if we want.
I think
Chris Cotillo from Mass Live had a write-up where he had all the names.
Was it the entire bullpen?
It was basically the whole bullpen. It was like six
of
them.
Was it just the bullpen?
I know Brennan Bernardino was there because it was the one guy President Trump knew.
Trump's like, I know who that is. And it's like, no, come on. Garrett Crochet. Who even if Garrett Crochet walked into most politicians' offices, I would probably say, unless it was like George W. Bush, who is locked in on all 30 teams in MLB, like they're probably not knowing who Garrett Crochet is. They're like, this is obviously a professional athlete, but I don't know what sport you play.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
Yeah, but Brennan Bernardino, Brennan Bernardino could walk into most bars in Boston
and nobody
would know who he was.
No, this is the list of guys that made the trip over to the White House before. So that was July 3rd,
yes.
The day off. It was Trevor Story, Justin Wilson, Abraham Toro, Romy Gonzalez, Connor Wong, Greg Weissert, Willier Abreu, Garrett Whitlock, Brennan Bernardino, and Rob Refsnyder.
Okay, because I was going to say, Trevor Story had one of the best games of his season.
Maybe
so.
He was
Trump
in...
bump.
Maybe it's a Trump bump.
Was he getting all like the lift cleaning places that Trump does on the golf course?
It's
like all the free.
It's he's got the Midas touch from Trump.
I guess maybe he was just inspired by the history of the White House. That's what it was. He was walking through the White House. He was just amazed at all the history that's held.
I was going to say if Walker Buehler walked through there, maybe he also would get a Trump bump. Mm. But he at least wasn't in the video. It doesn't mean he wasn't there.
True.
Did anybody, Jacob? I don't know because I. They honestly are not great with all of the press conference availabilities on the Red Sox. Did anyone ask Cora about the visit?
I didn't hear it in his post game.
All right.
Okay.
Well, effort for that.
Yeah,
I know
it's
a weekend that a lot of people took off, but Cora did not go to the White House in 2019 when they were celebrating the 2018.
Didn't Trevor Story talk to Fleming and Cooper Boardman after the game? How did they not ask?
I don't
know. Flemball, what are we doing? You couldn't have asked. Everyone just,
how did you enjoy your White House tour?
Yeah, that's simple.
Dude,
like, did you?
Were
you inspired by the history of the White House?
I'm still bitter because I grew up around Washington, D.C., if you haven't heard. And I went to school in Washington, D.C. And one of my friends was working in the West Wing as an intern one summer. And we were supposed to get a tour at night of the West Wing. And I was like super stoked.
And you mean the actual West Wing, not like the television show West Wing?
No, in the White House.
Cool, 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 cool.
And the night that we literally show up for the tour, and I can't remember who it was, but some dumb country artist was there and just spur of the moment wanted a tour. So they had to like shut down all the other tours.
Really?
So that this guy could go take a tour of the West Wing. And I was so mad. We had it planned for like 6 weeks.
Now I want to know who the country artist was.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. It was somebody, it was some mainstream country artist, and I can't. I was so, we were all just, I felt terrible. One of my friends, like her family came in from New Jersey to go on this tour.
Really?
And we were at the White House at security, and they were like, we've shut down all tours.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So just think about that. I bet the Red Sox players did that to somebody on the 3rd of July. It's probably some nice family who came out from Wyoming, and they want to go on some tour of the West Wing, but the Red Sox are in there trying to get a Trump bump.
Well, maybe not.
43-45 team at the time.
Maybe they booked that ahead of time, because to the Red Sox credit, a team spokesperson said the team toured the White House today as part of their family road trip to D.C., That's what the team spokesperson
said. They bring all their families?
According to Cotillo, that's what the team spokesperson said. That's I guess the family made the road trip down to the nation's capital for 4th of July, and they're like, you know what? Let's take family trip. Let's head over to the White House, take a look, and they ended up getting to meet the president.
I got it. Word to the wise out there, if you're thinking of doing something like that this time of year, July in D.C. is awful.
Really?
It's so gross. Yeah. I mean, that I know they say drain the swamp. It's a literal swamp. It is disgusting. The air in the city does not move. It doesn't move.
That's gross.
The air in the city doesn't move. Everything's hot. It's disgusting. It sucks.
The last time I was in D.C., I was getting accosted inside a Krispy Kreme donut.
Inside a donut?
Inside the Krispy Kreme donut shop. Yeah.
For what?
Sick brag, bro.
At the one by DuPont Circle? I feel like I know exactly the one you're talking about.
I don't know.
Anyway, who cares?
Does DuPont Circle have like a little farmer's market sometimes?
Probably. Everywhere
then,
has a farmer's market.
Regardless. My friend works at that farmer's market. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Do you really? Yeah, so yes. We were there a couple years ago now. It was probably 3 years ago. And we were there to see like a Bruins Caps game. And it was like March or something. And my buddy and I had gotten up earlier. We're like, let's go get some hot and fresh Krispy Kreme donuts. And we walked down the street, went to Krispy Kreme. And then some gentleman came in yelling at us to buy a newspaper while we were trying to get donuts. And we're like, sir, we're all set. Thanks.
Was he unhoused?
I think so. Mm. The Krispy Kreme donuts employees needed to escort him out of the building. But
he's
I got yelled at.
He's just standing up for local journalism.
Yeah,
as a media member,
I should have been happy.
You should have bought a newspaper.
You're right. That's my fault. 617-779-7937. Mecko and Scheim here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Mecko and Scheim here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Full Red Sox hour so far for you. And Mecko has a fun game to play later involving Red Sox from many, many years ago.
It's a name game.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited.
I'm just going to go ahead and tell you what it is.
Okay.
Is it a Red Sox player from before 1920?
Okay.
Or is it a serial killer from before the year 1900?
Perfect. Okay. All right. This will be good.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say the name.
Yep.
I'm going to read the name. You're going to either guess or you're going to just know because of your deep knowledge, mostly on Red Sox players pre-1920,
yeah, exactly.
Of course. I mean, you're not like an encyclopedia of old-time serial killers I am.
Yeah, definitely not.
So we'll go through that, and you'll be able to tell me which is which. I have many names here, and I have details about both sides.
Heck yeah. All right, I'm very excited for this. We'll play this, probably in the noontime hour.
Yeah,
we will play,
that sounds good.
We will play Mego's game. I'm very excited for this. Mego has done a lot of radio this week, so she's excited to have a lot of fun with that, with her game. So we're going to do that a little later on. I'm very, I'm ready to go. I feel like my knowledge of serial killers pre-1900 might impress you. So
really?
Yeah, so I'm excited. Maybe
what if they're worldwide?
Ooh. That's interesting.
Because think about pre-1900. I mean, some of these go back. Some of these go back centuries. I'm just going to let you know. But there's a certain point where you go back through the history of these names, because I did a lot of research for this segment. I'm not going to lie. I started this like earlier this week. And you go through deep enough in history and everybody just becomes a vampire. They call everybody, they're like, they're the vampire of blank.
Wait,
the
really?
Werewolf of blank. Yeah, because...
Werewolves of London rejoined.
Yeah, in the 1500s and 1600s, anybody who was a killer, they'd just be like, they're a monster. And they'd so they'd give them a nickname, like, oh, it's the, you know...
can't we get a little creative with the nickname? Like,
the vampire of blank.
Vampire would insinuate that, like, they exsanguinated their victims.
They
some
what?
Sort. We took all the blood from their victims.
What was that word?
Exsanguinated.
Then? Have you heard that before, Jacob?
I think I said that right.
Let's see. I'm not familiar with the word.
I know
I'm
sanguine.
Impressed.
I believe is blood in Latin. Yeah, exsanguinated is to drain a person, an animal, or an organ of all of its blood.
Well, I do think that there was some stuff like that in some of the 1500s.
Yeah, and like if you had said that they were like a werewolf, you would have think they like ripped them apart. You know what I mean? Like
again. They're in our country, didn't you used to draw and quarter people, or was that only in Britain?
I don't think that was in the United States.
I don't know. I mix up some of the punishments.
I think that was more of a Victorian era thing, so I think that's more of a Europe thing.
Okay.
I think. I might be wrong. But
I know what it is.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, everybody knows what drawing and quartering is. Well, I'd hope so. Well, anybody that's taken a history class. Right?
Listen, I don't want to step on the segment that we're going to have later,
yeah, you're right.
But it's going to be a spicy one.
I'll dial it back. So we've talked a lot about the Red Sox. I had a question for you, Mego, that I've kind of been thinking over the course of the program. We've talked about the idea that Alex Bregman could move at the trade deadline. As you mentioned, the Athletic piece that had Bregman listed as the 13th position player that could get traded. There's a couple other Red Sox players on that list.
Okay.
So my question for you is, aside from Aroldis Chapman, who do you feel is the most, if the Red Sox are to be dealing away a player on this roster, who is the most likely player dealt? Because I feel like Aroldis Chapman is clearly the most likely. It's a team-friendly contract, one-year deal, and he's dominant relief pitcher. Every playoff team needs that. Aside from him, who do you think would be the most likely on this roster to get dealt at the deadline?
I don't want them to do it, but I still think it's Jaron Duran because of the rumors that were out there earlier before the Rafael Devers trade. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, there's a lot of smoke around this, and he opens up opportunities in that logjam in the outfield, at least. That makes some kind of logical sense. And he's turning 30. He hasn't been the player that he was last year, which nobody really expected, but he hasn't been the player that he was in 2023 statistically either. And so maybe they feel like they know more about Jaron Duran than others in the market, and they think they've seen the best of him. That'd be hard to believe for how old he is and the trajectory that he's had, but maybe he would be the one that they move if they think that this is the most that they're going to get for him at this point.
Yeah, I know a while back, Sean McAdam had said that he wouldn't be surprised if Jaron Duran got dealt, more so specifically because of that logjam. I don't know, having seen what Jaron Duran can do at, his peak, more or less, I feel like it's really hard to kind of move on from a guy like that, especially if you're trying to convince people that you want to win baseball games. First, you deal Rafael Devers, then you deal the guy who was top five in WAR just last year in Major League Baseball. And so I look at it, and I know it doesn't necessarily mean that they're waving the white flag, but it really would feel like it if they were to deal a guy like Jaron Duran, that they are really kind of like, yeah, you know, we're just going to kind of move Jaron Duran. We're not really trying to win this year. Our goal is to win next year as the young players develop and get another year under their belt.
Well, it feels that way with almost any player that they could move besides Aroldis Chapman. Like, Aroldis Chapman is a beast and has been a really good move for them, but I could understand if they look at it and say, it's not a sign of surrender completely if we move on from him. Like, we feel like we can get a really good return because he's on an expiring deal and he's a really nice piece to trade. But even on the text line earlier, I saw someone say, if they trade Chapman, they're not trying to win this year. I understand the sentiment. Like, everybody just wants them to add. Everybody wants the Red Sox to get through these next couple of series and be above 500 and not give them to an excuse to at least add something. Mm-hmm. But I still think that if they trade Aroldis Chapman, you can still say technically that they're in it if they add something on top of that.
Especially because I think trading Aroldis Chapman at this point would be the highest possible return you can get for Aroldis Chapman. Like, he's been that good that this is the maximum amount you could get back for Aroldis Chapman. So just kind of assets-wise, it makes sense to move on from a guy who's leaving at the end of the year anyways. So I would get, I wouldn't think that it's necessarily a white flag if you trade Chapman. 413 text 617-779-7937. If you want to call in, you can also text to that number as well. 413 text. There's almost too much smoke around Duran. I think Willier is going to end up bringing in a massive package in return because I think a lot of teams would love that guy. Willier Abreu also on this Athletic Pieces list. I believe he is number 10.
Where's Duran on that list?
Duran is 6.
Okay.
So Duran a little higher than Willier Abreu, which I think makes sense, especially for the down year he's having. It would make sense if the Sox wanted to move on from him, and he's also getting closer to a time in which you have to pay him more money. So that, to me, makes more sense. But I agree. Like, I almost feel like if they're going to – they've just – like, when Sam Kennedy – because Wiggy even said it on our show at one point when we had Sam on for a front office report. Actually, it might have been Craig. But Wiggy's like, yeah, don't trade Duran. We love Duran. And Craig kind of laughed and was like, look, we love Jaron. Like, we love what he does. We love what he adds to the team.
We love what the return's going to be on him.
And that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried Craig's going to stick the algorithm into his AI program and get it back and be like, I don't know, man. The MLB trade machine says it's a really good deal for us. We should probably do it. And then
the computer tell him that we've seen the best of Duran, and so it's time to move on.
A lot of people have made that argument. It may. The computer may do that, and that's what I worry about. But I'm hoping the Red Sox do more adding than subtracting this season. Like, if you trade Jaron Duran, but you get back a, you know, massive bat at first base, say, like, okay, like, I get it. I understand. You're kind of trying to, you're upgrading a little bit by removing a piece, but you're also then clearing the log jam for the rest of your outfield. That doesn't feel like a full-on sell to me. But if you do it with Jaron Duran, kind of what you did with Rafael Devers, that to me is, if you get prospects back, like, that's just a white flag right in your face.
Absolutely.
617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original. It's time for some Celtics talk coming up next here on WEI.